Welcome back to Radio Rothbard. I'm Ryan McMakin. I'm a senior editor at the Mises Institute. And with me, as usual, is Tho Bishop, my associate editor. And we're back for another episode. And I said last week we were going to talk about the economy, which it seems is contrary to what Jerome Powell says. It's not strong. But then I realized we're about to have our July 4th holiday. That is Independence Day. And this is the libertarian holiday, in my view, and in the view of a lot of people who read Mises.org, of course. This is a holiday based on secession. This is a holiday where a bunch of libertarians got together and they said, hey, we like free trade. We don't like rulers pushing us around. We like to make our own rules. And when a government doesn't protect our rights, we're just going to break off and form our own government. That seems like a pretty good thing to celebrate. But this brings up the larger issue of, should we have a national holiday celebrating these sorts of things? And are national holidays a good thing? And Tho, you wrote an article for Juneteenth where you looked at some of the specifics of the origins of that holiday. But in the second half of the article, touched on some broader issues as well. Of, well, yeah, national holidays, they can be good, but they often generally serve the purposes of, especially when it's not an organic holiday, that's a bottom-up sort of thing, it's a top-down, hey, this is a holiday you're all going to celebrate now, that those sorts of things usually serve the interests of the ruling class, and they have really a propaganda purpose designed to get people behind the regime. And so just tell us a little bit about some of the basics of that idea.
Yeah. Well, it kind of comes into almost a rejection, if you will, of the old mantra of Andrew Breitbart about politics is downstream from culture. I think Paul Godfrey, among others, have written about how, well, no, actually, often culture is downstream from power. And I think the way that federal holidays, and really this isn't simply taking cheap shots at Washington force, this is a long historical phenomenon of centralized power, the regime in charge, creating feast days, creating these big public celebrations to honor a specific political agenda. Napoleon creates Saint Napoleon Day because he wants people to feel a certain way about Napoleon. And these things often work. You know, it's a lot of holidays. There's a lot of content that's with it, in terms of what you see on TV or what you're taught in schools. So these are also effective. They aren't simply some sort of political theater in a way that a lot of things that Washington does may seem really important within sort of the confines of Capitol Hill, but don't really resonate broadly. I think you often see, who are the secular saints of American society. And it's the presidents that we honor on President's Day, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and someone like MLK. They want to remove Christopher Columbus because, that he's now a problematic, secular saint in that regard. And so I think it's just an interesting dynamic. And then obviously, Juneteenth was the first time we had a new federal holiday put into law in quite a while. I believe prior to that, it was MLK Day in 83. And so again, it's an aspect of it's beyond the virtues of Juneteenth itself as a specific historical point, but something I think some libertarians were very blind on what is actually going on here in terms of, why is the Biden regime actually doing this sort of thing?
Well, and historically, there's lots of good examples of this. You pointed out, and I have in some of my own articles as well, that the French revolutionaries basically rewrote the calendar completely. They went so far as to create 10-day weeks and 3-week months and renamed all the month names. And they replaced the saint feast days with feast days honoring like flowers and crops and gems and things like that, so that you had all these holidays designed around the natural world. And so it was just sort of this, let's recreate their traditional holidays, but we'll just drain it of everything that could have possibly honored an institution outside the French state.
Yeah, well, in almost its own way, there's almost sort of an objectivist Randian sort of part to it, right? This is a particularly rational brand of calendar Because yes, they're so convinced of their own reason triumphing over any sort of tradition and superstition. And that's what leads to giant mountains and with Robespierre worshiping the cult of reason.
Yeah, everything needs to be regimented, made uniform. And that's what state building often is, right? Is we're a state, we're going to make everything more reasonable, more rational, more better measured. Everything's going to match from place to place. And all of these weird regional variations and stuff, we're just going to plow it all under a bulldozer. And certainly that's what the French Revolution was largely about. And so that was an example. And of course, under the Soviet communists, you had a lot of that stuff, right? They had tried to abolish the weekend altogether. They wanted workers on sort of this rolling week that never stopped. So you would just be assigned which days you would work, and it would vary from week to week. And there was never a day off where everybody got the same day off. So that basically made it impossible to celebrate Easter Sunday. And they had the hardest time stamping out Christmas. But then they realized that, hey, this Father Christmas guy, based on St. Nicholas, who was the patron saint of Russia, this Father Christmas guy, he looks a lot like Karl Marx, or rather the other way around. Karl Marx looks like St. Nicholas a bit. So let's just create like Papa Frost, and we'll have all the school children venerate this guy who really just looks like Marx. And then we'll do like classroom exercises about what's important on this special winter holiday, as they called it. But then ultimately, we emphasize that Papa Frost, i.e. Karl Marx, shows up and shares things with everybody. And then at the end of the exercise, we all thank Stalin for the plenty that we have received from nature and so on. And so you can see the importance of that. Now, that got its start a little slower in the United States because, of course, it's classical liberal foundations, it's libertarian foundations, right? This idea of imposing national holidays on everybody and certainly thanking the state for these things was greeted with quite a bit more skepticism. I note in an article I did on Thanksgiving once that Washington started early. Washington, who was not particularly libertarian in his views, at least in the American context. Yeah, sure, he was libertarian compared to Napoleon, for sure. But he had this idea of, hey, we should have a national day of Thanksgiving and prayer to thank God for the new Constitution. But some Democrats, they were like, well, let's wait a few years and see if this Constitution actually delivers any of these supposed blessings that General Washington says it will. So that they rejected that idea. And it was later than, as you note in your article, that they finally started to celebrate July 4th as a thing. But along later, there came attempts for more national days of Thanksgiving, which Andrew Jackson, being a good Jeffersonian, just rejected outright, saying, look, we don't need a national holiday. We don't need national politicians telling us when to pray or when to be thankful. And actually, it violates what he saw as the separation of church and state, which at the time, because Jackson understood the proper foundations of the Bill of Rights, which is that it only limited the federal government, he thought that some sort of national day of prayer violated the state days of prayer, because any sort of religious festival that had any sort of tinge there of religion, that could only take place at the state level, because the federal government, the general government, as Jackson called it, could have no role in religion whatsoever. He didn't have a problem with states having days of prayer, but he saw correctly, I think, that any sort of nationally announced holiday was going to erase local prerogatives. And so then, of course, in the 19th century, Abe Lincoln comes along and says, we're going to have a national day of Thanksgiving now, specifically saying that you should be thankful for, quote, the advancing armies and navies of the Union, unquote. So, boy, we just haven't been thankful enough that the sword of the federal government hasn't chopped off enough heads. So that's a good reason to thank God, I guess. And so that was Abe's thing. And then it stuck after that. And as you noted, we've just had mounting national holidays after that. Of course, sometimes the left gets what they want, and they change the holidays, the Juneteenth thing. Here in Colorado, we had, although it's kind of debatable as to how big a victory this was for the left, they got rid of Columbus Day, and inserted Mother Cabrini Day, Francis Cabrini being a Catholic saint, interestingly enough, who had set up some orphanages and poverty relief centers in Colorado. And there's a Cabrini shrine and near Golden and that sort of thing. But of course, how much Cabrini's values reflected those of the modern American left? Probably not much. Obviously, not a pro-abortion lady was Mother Cabrini. But whatever, that was what replaced Columbus Day. But that was designed to placate local Native Americans while also not upsetting the Italian Americans so much, because Cabrini was born in Italy. And so it really was just this effort to, hey, let's create a holiday that will curry favor with some important interest groups that we as the Democratic Party want to make happy. So that's a case of a holiday just being blatant interest group politics. So you got all those factors going on there. And it's really doesn't take much to see how the idea of these holidays, which we're supposed to regard as just with warmth and a chance to all come together as a nation, they really often just have their origins in partisan politics.
Well, and even one of the biggest, I think, sort of holiday spats was going back to the origins with, you know, the Federalists versus the Jeffersonians. You know, because on the one side you had the Hamiltonian faction that, you know, they wanted to have these big parades, and they would bring down, you know, these giant boats with the all celebrating the Constitution, right? Which was kind of the, you know, as anyone who has listened to Liberty versus Power with Patrick Newman and I, this great coup of you know, the American Revolution, and then of course the Jeffersonians come back and you know, a lot more emphasis put on the Declaration of Independence, which, you know, has its own sort of self-serving ring if you're a Thomas Jefferson fan. This is something that's back and forth for quite a while. And it's interesting. I looked at, you know, what are the proposed sort of holidays in recent years that haven't come in, you know, some stuff that may come in the future. And of course, it's precisely sort of mirrors you know, politics today, where it's all just kind of, you know, targeting out, you know, reaching out to various certain political groups, like Carolyn Maloney, who is not the brightest person in Congress, which itself is a low bar. She's been pushing for Susan B. Anthony Day to be celebrated on Washington's birthday. So make it a transgendered holiday on that one a little bit. We have Cesar Chavez Day, which Barack Obama wanted. Which, of course, you know, appealing to a certain sort of labor union demographic there. Charles Rangel wanted Malcolm X Day, which Rothbard may have been a little bit more sympathetic to. But, you know, I don't think there's been much progress on that one. And then, of course, then you have kind of standard, you know, like Flag Day, Election Day, you know, all just kind of continue to build up this sort of civil religion. And, of course, now, though, you know, the point about Papa Frost, you know, I'm now, you know, it comes to mind, if we can just get Walter Block to grow a large enough beard, you know, then maybe we can have, you know, a nap holiday with a proper mascot. So that's something to be considered in the future for some innovation on this holiday front. We have to get in the game, Ryan.
Well, it's really just a matter of time, I think, until the federal government attempts to put its own holiday on December 25th, right? I mean, that seems almost inevitable. Hopefully by then it'll be so undermined and considered so illegitimate that nobody will care. It'll just be a joke like stuff was in the old Soviet Union when they tried some outlandish new thing.
Biden Day. Let's get into it.
The most popular president of all time. So well, you mentioned July the 4th and Independence Day. So let's get specific and talk a little bit about that, right? Because sometimes national holidays can be good, although they do change over time often, right? Like Armistice Day, November 11th, seemed like good origins, right? It celebrated the end of a war. But over time, it basically became a chance to venerate government employees, that is, veterans. And the whole armistice aspect of it was completely forgotten. And there's basically no connection whatsoever to World War I anymore. So we could highlight the pointless bloody war that was. And so that kind of just went into the past. July 4th has has endured similar problems, and that it's kind of become a parade in some places, in some corners of the country, just for government employees and for some celebrating the existence of the U.S. government sometimes. But it's pretty hard to stamp out the whole Declaration of Independence aspect of it, especially if you look at the Declaration of Independence. It just says, you know, in Congress, July 4th, 1776, right up there at the top. And so there's a pretty clear connection there. And often people will even still read it at July 4th celebrations and that sort of thing. So that's pretty great. And it does celebrate secession. It's so hard to argue with the value of that. Now, of course, most people don't really emphasize that, but you can emphasize it, and it's really hard to argue that that has nothing to do then with July 4th. But I should note, and you and I have mentioned this in the past, that before we sing the praises of July 4th, and maybe the proper way to celebrate, just noting that I think Independence Day, I think the American Revolution was a good thing. I know that there's some libertarians or whatever they call themselves, certainly people who say they advocate for freedom, who will argue that that the American Revolution was a mistake, that the U.S. should have just stayed part of the British Empire so that we could all be like those beacons of freedom, Canada, where you're not allowed to board a plane without government permission, or like Australia, where you lock down people for a couple of years straight and then beat them to a pulp if they leave their apartments. That those places worked out much better, I guess, somehow. But I am pro July 4th. I am a July 4th fan. And so I don't know. How do you feel about that, though?
No, I'm very much within the camp that, you know, Rothbard's Nation Conceived in Liberty sort of you know, romantic libertarian view of the revolution. And I think that there's an important sort of dynamic there where, you know, it's something if we think about, you know, in a broader environment. And I think that, you know, you have this sort of, I understand the sort of conservative concerns about revolution itself as a social phenomenon, right? And I think some of this, you know, some of these criticisms come from that sort of genuine conservative sort of the consequence that you're never really getting your freedom. You're simply, you know, exchanging one group of leaders for another, and that, you know, you don't always get better people on the other side of it. And obviously, you know, I think that there is a lot of value in not overly deifying the founding fathers, right? You know, you recognizing the deficiencies between them as individuals, the inconsistencies in the ideas, and then also appreciating, you know why the result of all of this, you know, America even today with all of our problems, outside of perhaps smaller countries where you just have very weak states, and you can kind of, you know, using the commerce of bribing, you know, perhaps get yourself a lot of individual freedom. And that part, I mean, if you look at large global powers, I mean, you know, there's something here about the ideas and the foundation of this country that, again, for all those problems that any Mises.org viewer knows, Fed, income tax, police state, yada, 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 you know, I think particularly in the last few years, you know, we've, you know, relative, right? Relative, at the very least, you had the opportunity for states and things like that to completely just kind of shove off anything that Fauci and Biden and Trump kind of wanted to do in different parts of the policy apparatus. And so to that standpoint, I think when I think about, you know, the American Revolution, I see it more as sort of a national liberation sort of front, you know, a legitimate order pushing back against what had become an illegitimate foreign power, right? And so I think that absolutely makes it a holiday worth celebrating. I think that some of the things in the margins, I remember growing up, you know, kind of laughing at, you know, Christian friends talking about, oh, well, you know, don't take the Christ out of Christmas. And of course, you know, when you're 7 years old, all you want is the toys on Christmas Day. I think, you know, there is, I think, though, a dynamic where you commercialize these holidays that have a much deeper historical meaning. I think you see that play out with a sort of 4th of July you know, it's all about grilling out and a day off and fireworks at the end. You know, I think calling it Independence Day rather than 4th of July, you know, has some value there. I think, you know, all of the, you know, using the Declaration of Independence and Thomas Jefferson and trifold hats and, you know, all that sort of, you know, good old spirit of 1776 iconography. I think those are the sort of things that are important, particularly considering, you know, the degree to which, you know, you're not going to get the same sort of, again, perhaps overly propagandic views of the founding fathers historically within public schools or you know, the sort of, that, you know, that aspect of the civil religion, which, you know, would kind of deify the founding of the country, you know, that has very much, I think, been subverted, you know, over the course of the past decade. And so this is something where, you know, there is, I think, tremendous value from a opposing centralized power perspective of really leaning into what the day is all about.
Well, it would seem that the bad stuff that came along with the revolution didn't actually come from the revolution proper. They came from the counter-revolution that the Federalists came up with after the revolution was over. And so you had the new Constitution, you had all that centralization that went on. It was not at all clear that you would just be replacing one powerful executive regime with another when the revolution was over. The French sent 13 ambassadors to North America to deal with the 13 states, who they just figured would be 13 independent countries, because if you look at the old Articles of Confederation, it's clear that these are really their own entities that are going to do things on their own. This Constitution did not protect slavery, by the way, unlike the 1787 Constitution, which ushered in the idea of the Fugitive Slave Acts and all of that, that you were on your own if you wanted to protect slavery in your own state under the older Constitution from 1775. And so actually the way things ended in 1783, right after the revolution, was really great. There was a lot of decentralization. It had not in this, you can't compare it at all to the French Revolution, because whereas the French state had already been extremely centralized by Louis XIV and his heirs and had become extremely powerful and it stamped out local control, that hadn't happened in the North American colonies, where they were still very decentralized and very localized, very democratic in the old school sense of things, and that the state legislatures had annual elections and they were truly the neighbors of the people that they were elected by. And so I just don't see a whole lot to really dislike there. I guess it's become subversive to celebrate that at all now, thanks to the 1619 Project, so that now it's just assumed that all these 18th century guys were rabid pro-slavery people, and they're even repeating old slave master propaganda that Northerners secretly loved slavery and saw themselves as benefiting greatly from Southern slavery because it made food cheaper in the North, allegedly, and that sort of thing. But very little evidence that was actually the case. And so weird that now this has just become something that's considered just almost off the wall by the left to just come out and say, yeah, you know, I think these people wanting to get rid of the British Empire was actually a good thing. But this has been recast as some sort of a horrible unwoke thing. So it seems almost my obligation to support the revolution has become even more so than it was just a few years ago.
Well, looking at other contrasts between like the American Revolution, the French Revolution, like I think there's something to be said about like the degree to which Paris, as a city, really sort of drove a large portion of the revolution itself and the fallout. Right, it was, you know, starving, you know, Parisian peasants that you know, made up a lot of manpower, a lot of the big you know, storming the Bastille, but also it was a unique sort of cultural environment within Paris that ended up, you know, kind of being used as, you know, kind of cultural imperialism against other parts of the country that had, you know, far deeper, you know, wars over, you know, civil wars going on over with the new revolutionaries against traditional, more Catholic, French countryside, things like that. Where in the U.S. you had that sort of, you had regional powers kind of in constantly sort of checking each other, right? You had the New Englanders checked with Virginia, you had the growing Western interest after the formation of the country itself. And so again, I think these are just kind of interesting, how do things kind of turn out in certain ways? I think that dynamic of powers is something that comes up a whole lot in a number of situations. But to your point, though, about the degree of it becoming more subversive over time, and again, the cultural accelerationism. Last year, I was watching the Hamilton musical on Disney Plus. My wife's sister is a big fan of it, and it's fascinating how something that was sort of the peak artistic signal of culture during the Obama years, right? The Hamilton musical. You're watching it today, like it itself even has sort of a subversive tone, because it's an outright celebration of the founding fathers. Slavery is not, every song doesn't end with some sort of, rubbing your nose and the fact that George Washington was a slave owner, right? Like George Washington is treated like this, sort of godly figure, kind of old school American canon style sort of thing. And so again, that's the degree to which, how far we've come, which has made my appreciation and enjoyment of July 4th only gone up more over time. But Ryan, I have to ask, how does the McMakin clan usually celebrate their Independence Day over there in Colorado?
Well, the neighborhood has like a parade that the kids do just around the block. It's just the spontaneous, non-official thing that people do, and so they decorate their bikes. You go to the Dollar Tree. This kind of goes to the commercialization thing you were talking about. You go to the Dollar Tree, and everything's labeled patriotic if it has stars and stripes on it. So you get you get eyeglasses that have those shade things. Those things that look like Venetian blinds over your eyes. And that's labeled patriotic sunglasses, and so you wear those. And then, of course, you get red, white, and blue crepe paper and all that sort of thing. So it has that element, right, of just silliness. But, of course, I always, make sure, they roll their eyes, but I always make sure and wish the kids happy Secession Day and ask them what they're going to smuggle today and what other federal laws they plan on breaking today, because that is an important aspect of it, right? And I've gotten pushback because I focused on the fact that this was during the Trump era, too, when all these right-wingers suddenly found their love of tariffs and trade controls, pointing out that the American Revolution was very much about shirking British regulations on trade. It was about smuggling rum and molasses. It was about just going to rural locations where there were no government agents, so you could sneak stuff off of boats and then trade it in the cities. And so just total disregard for the central government's laws was a deep part of the American Revolution. And the fact that we have conservatives now thinking that, yes, you should lock people in cages for trying to import goods that the federal government does not approve of is pretty bizarre and alarming, really, especially since these people claim to be pro-freedom. And then at the same time, of course, just disregarding federal taxes. I mean, we pay federal taxes for prudential reasons, right? You can choose to make a point by not paying your taxes, or you can go to prison. And since I like spending time with my children, I pay my taxes for prudential reasons. But the idea that they have some sort of moral authority and that I'm bound by some sort of religious part of my life or something to pay those taxes, it means nothing. And the revolutionaries are right about that. What I found is that they'll often come back with this nonsensical argument about how, well, the American Revolution was only okay because they had taxation without representation. But now we are represented in Congress, so you're not allowed to resist or complain about federal taxes at all. Let's look at that pragmatic terms. There's a multimillionaire somewhere who's never met you, who couldn't care less about you, who probably regards you as garbage, somewhere in Washington who, quote-unquote, represents you. And the ratio on that is about one member of Congress per 600,000 Americans within each congressional district. And so the idea that some rich guy thousands of miles away voted for a tax increase means that, yep, all those principles behind the American Revolution, they're now null and void, and we're now only allowed to celebrate the secession of the American colonies in an abstract sort of historical way. That was something important that those people from long ago did. And that was nice and everything, but it has really no, their secession movement has no relevance to the modern world. That's, of course, completely wrong. I mean, the principles that were important in the 1770s are just as valid today on a moral level. Now, it may not be prudent to start a war over that, but on a moral level, it hasn't changed at all.
So does this mean your 4th of July night comes with illegal raw milk and flushing of a hacked toilet? Goes against EPA standards.
You know, all that stuff that I know that's certain people's hobbies, but I don't have the time to hack my low flow toilet and all of that stuff. Although I do tell you that a very enjoyable 4th of July was, in fact, during the COVID lockdowns and everything, when there were no allowed official fireworks celebrations. And we have those here where you just walk over to the local firework thing and it's fun. And it is really a communal thing where people just kind of, they know where to go and they get together and kids are running around and things are nice and nobody gets violent and it's fine. But since none of that was allowed, boy, on July 4th, 2020, there were illegal fireworks just everywhere. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Where normally people don't do that because they can go to one of the officially sanctioned ones. But up and down the street, they're just illegal fireworks going off. And then if you drove down like the freeway, which in some places was elevated over the rest of the city, then you could just see people were shooting off like really illegal. There's different levels of illegality, but the super illegal stuff is stuff that shoots up into the air and could come down anywhere, right? And tons of people were doing those. And I'm not going to use those because I don't want to set anybody's roof on fire and so on. But the fact I did nevertheless find it hilarious that the state had attempted to make everyone behave by just taking away everything people liked for the July 4th celebration. But obviously hundreds of thousands of people couldn't have cared less. And I thought that really was in the tradition of the actual American Revolution.
Well, that's the whole thing. The more insane the state becomes, the easier it is to be a rebel. And, you know, again, the optics, again, I know in California, even, I mean, you've had, you know, just this ever going realm of fireworks. And it was great to see. We have a similar dynamic here in Panama City Beach. You know, it's the entire beach is just nothing but fireworks. They are smuggled in over the Alabama-Florida line. So I think that even adds to the proper tradition there because Free State of Florida still working on fireworks laws. But again, thankfully, Alabama's right there. And a lot of shops taking advantage right on the corner there. I'm just wondering now, like, what is the date if you are the Dollar General? You know, what is the date that you start changing up your inventory from Pride branded merchandise to patriotic merchandise? That's what I want to know. When does it go from rainbow sunglasses to red, white, and blue sunglasses? What's the peak moment there? This is sort of empirical research we're going to need to go be doing going forward.
Well, of course, on a corporate level, right, you see that every logo has a rainbow on it now. You don't actually see that for July 4th.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
So there does seem to be sort of this top-down corporate America holiday kind of eventually gives way to more of a bottom-up celebration of basically domestic barbecues and things sort of holiday. So, yeah, that is quite remarkable. In fact, I would say there's nationwide, there's probably way more government-sanctioned pride parades than there are 4th of July parades. I don't even know where there's a lot of 4th of July parades anymore. But yeah, it's clear to see which sort of parade and celebration the regime favors right now. And for good reason, right? You just don't want people taking the Declaration of Independence to heart because, well, you get all of these people saying, oh, well, you know, libertarian government has never been tried. What are you talking about? We got We got a libertarian constitution that was put into force in 1776. We had a declaration of, hey, if the government does a bad job, your rules don't apply to us, and we'll just secede and do what we want. That was a huge libertarian victory. And that was Rothbard's point, as you brought up earlier, right? This was, he called it the first war of national liberation. It was truly a radical libertarian situation where it transferred wealth from a central government and spread out that wealth among an ordinary people. But not in a commie way, in the way of, hey, the crown stole all this land and handed it out to its friends, and we're not going to tolerate that anymore. So it was really an anti-corporatist holiday. So I really just don't see the downside of celebrating the 4th of July. So yeah, if our more hardcore libertarian listeners, if you're having any doubts about that, go and buy your patriotic sunglasses at the Dollar Tree and celebrate it, because I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, so even if you're the sort of libertarian that loves to make posts about, you know, how stupid sports ball is and bread and circuses on Super Bowl day, you better be enjoying July 4th, because what else are you living for at that point? You know, you got to enjoy yourself a little bit.
If you're going to have a national holiday, this is the way to do it, because it's basically a holiday that is skeptical of the whole idea of a central government. So it's so much better than any other non-religious holiday that I can come up with. So this is the one you should keep on your calendar and do it. And yeah, maybe just to focus a little bit more on reading some of those lesser read texts in the Declaration of Independence, which basically just lists all the bad things governments do and how we get to just break off and form our own state, which serves our own purposes. So that can never be music to a government's ears. They're just hoping that you ignore that part of the Declaration.
So there you go. Independence Day gets the coveted Radio Rothbard endorsement. So way to go, Independence Day.
So we'll go ahead and wrap up with that. Happy Independence Day. If you're listening to this, you know, Friday or Saturday, you're coming up right on the day. But yeah, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, you should pretty much ignore any other national holiday that doesn't have its origins outside the state. And President's Day, Columbus Day, Juneteenth, all of that other stuff that apparently, I mean, if you work for the government or a bank, which is basically the government at this point, you get the day off, but very few other places do you get those sorts of day off. So this is, we're coming up on the good national holiday. And so we'll be back then next week to talk about, I don't know, I'm sure the economy will be tanking in early July as well. And we'll cover a little bit about that and how the government's just really not delivering on all this prosperity they were supposed to deliver. And so until then, thank you for listening to Radio Rothbard, and we'll see you next time.